Hello!
Hey guys, it's Arden Cho.
This is Seth Gilliam.
Hey, this is Holland Roden.
My name is Kiahu Kuhuanui.
Hello, this is Ian Bowen.
Hey you guys, this is Melissa Ponzio.
I'm Lyndon Ashby.
Hey, it's Ronnie Adams.
This is Tyler Posey, and you are listening to Not Another.
Not Another.
Not Another.
This is Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast.
Yes, it is!
Oh.
This is Jeff Davis, and you're listening to Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast.
Hi everyone, welcome to Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast, episode 86. This is a very special hiatus episode for you. We're rolling along with them. This is our first new episode of 2015, yay, and it's all about fan art in the Teen Wolf fandom and the greater world of fandom, I suppose, but, you know, mainly focusing on Teen Wolf today. So Karen and I are here today. Hi, Karen.
Hi.
Hi. And we are joined by two rather well-known to most people Teen Wolf fan artists. We have Daunt and Kendra, who are both very prominent artists in the fan community on the internet for, you know, you would have seen their things various reasons. Daunt, at the very least, if you follow this podcast, you will know her art style from our artwork for the podcast, which was a commission that she did for us. And Kendra, if you're following MTV and their Teen Wolf coverage, you'll know from her recaps that she does with MTV. But besides from that, they've done masses and masses of art for Teen Wolf and various other fandoms. So I'm sure that you've come across them at some point or at a convention or something like that. But I'll stop talking and we can say hello to them. So hi, guys.
Hi.
Hi.
I am blushing so much now. So thanks for the intro.
Oh. Sorry.
You do us too much kindness.
Sorry. So Kendra and Daunt are here today to tell us a bit about sort of being fan artists in the Teen Wolf world. But first of all, we'll just in case you aren't in touch with these girls already, where can people find you either on social media or like your art portfolios online and stuff like that? So Kendra, what was your contacts on the internet for people?
I am Kendra W. Can Draw, get it? Because it's kind of a pun.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much everywhere, Twitter, Tumblr, if you add a .com to the end of it, it's my website, which is newly updated and, you know, finally up to date for the first time in 2.5 years. That's honestly the best way to get in touch with me. That's where I am constantly, 24/7.
Mm-hmm. All the time.
All the time.
Daunt, what about you? Where's the best way to either reach you or see your art?
Well, I have my, like, my general Tumblr is daunt.tumblr.com. But off of that, I have, like, my portfolio Tumblr, which is dauntingfire.tumblr.com. And I tend to tweet a lot, so I have Daunt Draws on Twitter. So those are probably the best ways to get a hold of me. But I also do have a website, gallery.dauntingfire.com, and that's just got, you know, I guess my preferred works on it, I guess. But it's good. It's good. And there's a contact form on my website address, too. But literally just tweet me and I'm pretty much always there. So.
Cool. Well, we will put those in the show notes for anyone who happens to want to get in touch, though I'm sure most people listening to this show will already know something about you, one or both of you. But, yeah. We just wanted to get the girls on to talk sort of in depth about the fan art community, I guess, for Teen Wolf and just, you know, being artists in general. We did a big episode with Heidi, who is one of the founders of AO3, about sort of fan fiction and the fan fiction community. But we haven't done one focusing on fan art before. So, yeah, it's just one of the ideas that we wanted to sort of cover while obviously Teen Wolf is off air and we're all, I guess, a little bit, you know, bored or missing it or something like that. So, yeah.
Pining. We're pining.
Yeah, I guess we have a bunch of questions about what you've been doing. So, yeah, Karen, do you want to, you know, did you have anything to say before we start or do you want to go straight in?
Just that I'm really excited for this episode because I have art for both of these guys, like, everywhere. It's kind of embarrassing. So, yeah, they're really awesome. Yeah. If you guys haven't heard of them before, please check them out. They make really beautiful stuff.
Yeah, I can turn my head like 90 degrees to the right, and like about 1 foot away from me is one of Kendra's pieces, and then I have I have one of Daunt's above my television in my living room. So yeah,
thanks guys.
That's okay.
That's awesome.
You're really embarrassed, aren't you?
Yeah, I am beat red right now at this moment.
But yeah, so Karen, do you wanna go ahead?
Sure. This first question is kind of a philosophical one, so sorry to start off with a hard one, but what do you guys think is so appealing about fan art, not just like for you guys doing fan art and kind of being in that community, but just for like fans of television shows and movies in general? What makes it so appealing to everybody?
I feel like I could be asking that. I ask myself that question a lot. Like, why is anyone following my stuff and paying attention to it? I think the whole point of like fan creation stuff is to kind of fulfill your wants and your needs that maybe the show doesn't quite fulfill, or like, yeah, you know, like kind of making your own little place and being like, and even if it's, you know, completely, you know, canon compliant stuff, it's kind of nice to, like, as a fan who wants to make stuff, it's kind of nice to be kind of doing your, like, taking it and running with it. And I think people like that, and it resonates with them, because, you know, there's only so much that the canon gives us. And so, you know, when there's no episodes left, like, where do you go? It's like, you go to the people who are still making stuff, you know, outside of the show. Yeah. I mean, that's my educated guess.
Yeah. I totally agree with that. I think it's like, when you find a show that you like so much, or, you know, media that you like so much, it kind of, doing fan art gives you a chance to be a part of it in a way, mm-hmm. like to take something that you already love and just kind of put your own heart into it too. It's fulfilling to do that. And then on top of that, it's, you're getting to share that with other people who like it too. So it's like a bonding experience with, mm-hmm. with the other people who also like the thing that you like. So that's really cool. I like that a lot. I think that's what really appeals to me, you know, about fan art, at least, and fan fiction. I think it carries over to fan fiction too. Like, that's just kind of opening the book further, turning more pages in the book that we haven't seen yet, and creating something new, and mm-hmm. sharing that with people.
No, I totally agree. And I guess this is kind of going from more of a creator standpoint than a consumer standpoint, but I totally agree with Daunt. And for me anyway, because, you know, I feel like what I can contribute is art. So whenever I find a new show or something that really moves me, that's my way of being like, that's like, you know, I want to create and share and put it out into the world and find other people who feel the same way. So it's kind of my way of reaching out and being like, you guys too, right? Like, yeah, you know.
What I've sort of found is that's sort of just what happens when you like a thing, a show, book, band, whatever, and you just want to spend more time in that world than there is, if you know what I mean. Like, you want to spend more time in that world, whether it's like mainlining every fic that's been written, or writing it yourself, or drawing it, or something like that. Like, you know, people respond differently. Some people only want to or feel able to consume. Some people, you know, want to express themselves by like writing meta or creating like their own stories or their own art. But it is all really coming from a place of just falling in love with something so much that you want to spend more time in that world. So what I'm curious about is, with you guys, what sort of got you started with fan art? Like, was it a particular fandom that you first either drew art for or were excited by, or, and how long does your career or your interest as an artist predate fan art? Like, what kind, like, were you like artistic, you know, children just drawing your dog, or, you know, drawing book characters or whatever, or how did that all happen from you, from artist to fan artist, I guess?
Okay, well, if we're talking about like the first fandoms where if we want to dig up this dark past of mine, I mean, aside from when I was a kid, my favorite show in the world was Sailor Moon, and I just spent like day after day after day drawing like Sailor Moon characters and doing my own little fan comics and making my own Sailor Scouts that were named after like weird obscure moons and stuff. But I never really got into fandom until super recently. I guess when I was a sophomore in college, so 3 or 4 years ago. And my fandom was Glee.
Okay. Don't worry, we all come from Glee.
I know.
We all come from Glee fandom.
The roots.
Yeah.
But so
this podcast exists, by the way, can I just say, because I joined Hyperbole to do a Glee podcast and Karen was a fan of that podcast.
Amazing.
So that, yeah, like, just saying, it's okay, we all have dark roots in Glee.
Glee's like the secret unifier of fandom people. But so, I mean, and okay, I'm clearly, I don't watch the show anymore, but that was kind of my first foray into fandom community.
Did you draw a lot of Blaine?
Yeah, I was really into Kurt and Blaine, and it kind of, I kind of stumbled into it by accident, because I actually, very similar to what I end up doing in Teen Wolf now, I did a comic, and because it was like some episode of who knows what, but I just made a silly little one shot comic whose punchline was a dick joke, of course. And I didn't follow anybody in the Glee fandom. I didn't know that anyone followed me, but it kind of caught on, and then people started paying attention, and so I started producing more, and it kind of all went downhill from there. aside from that, it just, you know, since then I've just kind of like every time I've kind of fallen into a fandom, my reaction is to produce art for it. And like Dawn said earlier, it's my way of connecting with people, and I like making people laugh, and I like making people feel things. So it's kind of my way of doing that. But I mean, I've always been an artist, so it's kind of, you know, a natural course of action for me.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was curious about, and Dawn as well. But yeah, what were you doing with art before you were a fan artist, I guess? Not that all you are is a fan artist.
It's true. It's all I am. It's consumed me. For Glee, I was in the middle of going through art school for comics and cartooning anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I had just gotten the job that I actually currently have, which is at a stuffed animal design company.
Oh my God.
So I kind of like peripherally do art constantly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was just kind of, it just seemed right that that's, you know, what it translated into.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when I was a wee tiny daunt, I would draw...
A little hatchling daunt.
Tiny, tiny, hatched from my little egg flopping around. I would draw animals. I loved animals. So I drew animals all the time. But then I started watching, and I'm older than you, Kendra, so my Sailor Moon was when I was in high school. But when I was watching TV back in the dark ages, I was watching Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and that really inspired me to start drawing. And even though I wasn't in a fandom, because when I was that age, there really wasn't an internet at the time. Yeah. So, yeah, I just enjoyed drawing Ninja Turtles. And from there, it kind of like escalated. And then, you know, Sailor Moon happened. I don't know if any of you remember this, but Sci-Fi Channel had like the Japanimation weekend or something like that, where they would show a bunch of anime, and that was really inspiring too. So it kind of just steamrolled me into doing art as a career, just kind of kept inspiring me to go further with it. But I think my first actual fandom engagement was Supernatural fandom.
Mm.
That was like 5 years ago now, I think. So yeah, it was a lot of fun. And it was on LiveJournal, so it was before... God, I'm so old. So it was before Tumblr and everything. So the way fans would engage with each other was very different, and it was very strange, too, because Supernatural, when I joined, didn't have very many fan artists. They had very, very few, and the fan artists who were in there did graphics. Like, it was more graphic-oriented, and they would do manipulations and such like that, So actual like drawing artists, there weren't as many. So it was very different coming into it from there, and then just kind of seeing it explode now. So it was definitely definitely fun. But the part I loved the most about it was getting to engage with the fans and like share how much I enjoyed the show with other people who enjoyed it too, and just like be able to connect. I know some people say that artists should draw because they enjoy it, just because they enjoy drawing for themselves more than anything. And that's, I think that's true. But also we like to interact with people about our art.
Oh,
like
yeah.
It's exciting. It's fun to be able to like make people feel things and feel positive and then hear back from them that, that something you made, made them feel good. And that's just really cool. So I feel like there's so much more to art than just like fulfilling for only yourself. It's great seeing it being fulfilling to other people too.
See,
have I gone on a tangent? I think I'm on a tangent.
No, you're good. No, but you see, but you say making them feel good, but there's something so delicious when you draw something really sad and then you go into the tag viewer and everyone's screaming and cursing your name and crying. Like, I'm just sitting at my desk cackling like a maniac.
Wow.
That's my favorite thing. I'm evil.
That is true. Every so often you're just like, yes. Cry.
Yeah, you think about penis jokes and butts, but all of a sudden I'll whip it out and hit you with the misery dick.
Thanks. That's the episode title.
I was just gonna say.
Oh god. Anyway, I don't know if we can have a title with dick on it on the front page of Hyperbole.
Oh, sure we can. I approve it. It's fine.
Anyway.
Misery wiener. How about that?
Oh god.
Slightly better. This question was originally specific to Teen Wolf, but feel free to expand on it if you want to. But I just wanted to know which characters were your favorites to draw, and I think I know, so I'm going to see if I'm right once you guys are done talking.
In Teen Wolf?
Yes.
I don't know okay, I'm going to say Scott. Because, and I'm not sure if it's because I just love Scott so much that it doesn't, like, even if I couldn't draw him, I would just draw him constantly. But I like drawing Scott and his little crooked face. That's my fave.
I actually am right there with Kendra. Scott is definitely currently my favorite to draw. You know what? I used to really enjoy drawing Styles, but I feel like I've drawn him to the point where, like, now I just kind of, like style. But Scott, I feel, is like, he's still challenging to me, and when I draw him I smile a lot, and so that mm-hmm. that makes me happy. So
this is not really my favorite, but I actually really love drawing Melissa. I don't know why. She's got a very nice face to draw. It's I don't know.
Oh, cool.
I would have guessed Scott for Dawn. I think I don't know what I would have guessed for Kendra, but that would have been my guess for
I was half right, because I knew that Dawn was going to pick Scott. But Kendra, I would have bet money that you would have picked Brayden.
Oh, man. Hold on. Sorry, my computer went to sleep. I was so shocked that my computer turned off. Damn, that's a good answer. I do love Brayden. I don't actually draw her enough. So I think that's probably why I didn't think of it. But yeah, Brayden is actually in my mind she's been my favorite development of season 4 onward. I love Brayden to death. So yes, okay, she's number 2 then.
Okay. You're welcome.
I feel bad because I actually haven't drawn Kira or Malia very much.
Yeah,
so,
same.
So and because I like them so much, but I haven't drawn them, and so I feel like once I start trying to draw their faces, maybe. Like, my interest will peak more, because finding that way to get their faces looking like them but not looking exactly like them is always, like, a challenge, and I like the challenge. So, for some characters, Boyd is so hard to draw.
Boyd is so hard. Why?
He is.
He's got such a beautiful face. Why is it so difficult?
I don't know. He's got Chris Pine syndrome. Because Chris Pine is so hard to draw, and Cinqua is so hard to draw.
That's because Chris Pine is too beautiful in reality, and you don't want to take away from like how they actually look. And then
same with Daniel Sharman. I hate drawing him because he's so cheekbones are like made out of angel dust. I don't know, like it's something something is horribly difficult about his face.
Exactly, and there's something. Because he has these really high cheekbones and his shadows fall really interestingly on his face, but his jaw is like.
You could just cut glass with it. You could cut glass with his jaw.
Yeah.
And then he's got like these like little Cupid's bow. Like, don't get me started because it'll just evolve.
Are you okay?
It'll just evolve into me swooning.
are you okay? Do you need some water?
Yeah, somebody hose me down. Can Daniel hose me down?
I miss Isaac so much right now.
Oh, yeah.
I'm out of control. I'm so sorry.
No, you're great.
So I have a question, which I think I sort of know the answer to, but I sort of want to elaborate on it because I think it's something that people aren't really that understanding of. Okay, so bear with me. Like, when I read a book that, you know, there's no movie version of or whatever, I obviously picture the characters a certain way in my head, but I also have a very similar thing when I read fan fiction. Like, I can read fan fiction, like, about Captain America. What I'm reading, what I'm seeing in my head isn't Chris Evans, if you know what I mean. It's like, mm-hmm. it's a character that is maybe more true to the character of, you know, of whatever it is than like a specific actor's face. And obviously, you know, with fan art for a movie or for a TV show, especially where, you know, you're spending so long with like the character, you know, as a particular actor, rather than someone who could just transition, you know, Spider-Man can be, you know, five different people. How do you kind of equate that in your head? Like, when you're drawing Scott, is Scott 100% Tyler Posey to you? Like, because you mentioned sort of trying to keep their face the same but make it different. So is your mental image of Scott your own creation as opposed to Tyler Posey's face?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, especially when I've been, if I've been drawing them for a while and I kind of get that muscle memory, I'll stop looking at photo reference so much. And then it kind of becomes, they become more of like a drawing of Scott that I did. You know what I mean? It's less based on the actor and more based on kind of like what I picture in my head, if that makes sense. And like what I remember of his face. And so like, you know, so it's like crooked jaw, moles, like kind of beaky nose and, you know, that kind of thing. And it kind of, I guess, divorces itself a little bit from the actor. But it's interesting because it's interesting that you say that because I've gotten commissions or I've done work where I'm specifically drawing the actor over the character and they do kind of look different. So I don't know if it's like a personality thing showing through of the, so I like, you know, if I'm picturing Tyler Posey in my head and I'm trying to get that kind of energy and that kind of attitude, it's going to be a lot different than if I'm picturing Scott McCall.
Mm. I definitely agree with that. For me, like, whenever I'm drawing Scott, I never think of him as Tyler Posey, like, ever. I think I have, like, I think it's self-defense because sometimes I do draw, like, adult art. And I'm not going to say anything super raunchy.
Describe it to me in detail, in vivid detail.
No, like,
Paint me a picture, Dawn.
I can't.
You don't want to feel like you're drawing porn of Tyler Posey.
Mm-hmm. I feel like that's so invasive and it's such a fine line. And like, it's so hard to explain, but in my head, like I see in my head, it's like comic character type art. Like I'm not necessarily picturing the actors. I'm picturing their characters. And
right.
I don't know if that makes sense or not, but
no,
so when I do these pictures, like my goal is not to necessarily make it look exactly like them, but just to carry over the personality of their face, like the things that make their face very clearly their face, and kind of like translate it. So I generally don't like think about it as I'm drawing Tyler Posey. I'm actually just drawing Scott McCall. And I feel like to me at least, that line's really important. But I don't know if that'll make sense to people who don't draw, though, because most people are just like, but it is Tyler Posey. And it's hard to explain. But in my head, I don't see Scott as Tyler Posey.
I think it does make sense. And I mean, I've seen fan art that's very obviously photo reference, like, you know, like a character, you know, done in a pose or a facial expression. I'm like, I know the photo shoot that actor did that you're getting that from, and I don't like it. Like I don't like that kind of thing. In fact, like it's very like talented to be able to draw that realistically, but I don't like that kind of thing generally just, I'd prefer like the character to just be the character as well.
Yeah. It's interesting too, because I actually recently got like a message on Tumblr, and they weren't trying to be rude or anything, but they were asking me a question about fan fiction. They're like, well, like, what's, you know, how is it okay for you to be writing these stories about these people? And granted, they were talking about RPF, but they were like, how is that okay? Like, isn't that super invasive? And I'm like, I feel like some people do have difficulty separating the fan, like the fandom version of these actors and these characters and these people with their real life counterparts. But in my mind, they're very, very, very separate. And I think that that's a really important distinction to make. And when you start kind of blurring those lines, that's when you run into those really uncomfortable, like, you know, accusing the actor of doing things that their character has been doing. You know what I mean? Like, it's a very important line to draw as a fan and as a creator, especially, to be like, there is a very distinct difference, and, you know, and you have to respect that, and you have to like be aware of it.
Mm. Okay. So Kendra, spotlight's going to be on you now. Because you did these really cool animated recaps with the Wolfpack girls, Katie and Amanda. And basically they did this like mini recap of an episode, and there's a video for each one, and it shows you actually animating different scenes from it. And when these first came out, I was so excited because they're really cool, because the style is that very like cartoonish version of it, and everything's really expressive. So just props to you, because I absolutely love it. But how did all of that come about?
Well, I was actually at ByteCon last spring, and I was tabling with Daunt, and we were having a grand old time. Matt from MTV, who used to run the Twitter, and now he kind of general social media stuff. He was at the con, and he kind of came by our tables, and, you know, he was, you know, perusing and talking and being very charming and wonderful. And I love Matt. And he kind of saw that I was doing, I did the smart thing of taking like 50 commissions that weekend. So I was trying to get through them as fast as possible. And I was just like head down, like drawing as fast as I possibly could. I was getting through them pretty fast.
You were a machine that weekend. That was crazy. Oh my God.
I don't know how I did it. I think I'm still recovering. But so he came by and he kind of saw that I was drawing. He's like, oh, you're drawing really fast. And I said, yeah, that's what I did. I'm like, don't talk to me. And so we kind of got to talking, and he would be like, would you be interested in doing some promo stuff for the new season, like for season 4 when it comes out? I'm like, yeah, absolutely. Like, totally. He goes, okay, I think we have something for you. So I didn't hear back for a couple weeks, and I kind of just thought, I assumed that he was just being nice, honestly. But then like a couple weeks later, he sent me an email, and he's like, hey, like, would you be willing? Like, here's my idea. We want to do these like animated recaps. And I'm like, I don't know how to animate. And he's like, okay, that's okay. What we can do is do a live stream, but not a live stream, basically. And I was like, oh, I can do that. So what ended up happening was I would just, I'd get the script from the Wolfpack girls, who are also lovely people. And it'd be like a minute long. And so I would just kind of sit down, and I had this recording software, that would just kind of take a video of my whole screen. And I would just sit there and draw each of the, little scenes in order as they were going to be talked about on the show. And then I would send it off to them, and they would speed it up a bazillion times because I draw very slow. and then it ended up being just like a minute long little clip of kind of like drawing out everything, like the kind of major points in whatever episode it was. It was very cool. It was very, very nice of them to reach out and do that. And I hope I get to do something similar in the next season.
That is so awesome.
I'm actually curious, because you said you didn't know how to animate. I'm not sure, like, if our listeners have seen the sort of semi-animated video that Kendra made for No Control on the new album for One Direction. Not officially or anything. I mean, it's better than most of their video. That video, that animation style of, like, it's still pictures, but you, like, move, you know, like, mm-hmm. the quote-unquote camera around on the still pictures and stuff like that. And, like, you know, obviously had a few frames to go back and forth. Like, did you teach yourself to do that, or is that just something you sort of progressed with in your studies, or like what happened there basically?
That's just kind of, I just kind of taught my, it was kind of like, I don't know. I would call it kind of animated storyboarding. It's, mm-hmm. So it's not quite an animation, cause I still don't actually know how to animate. But it's kind of, at least for that video, it was kind of a storyboard of like my dream music video for the song, which I still maintain that they should do. They can, you know, they don't have to pay me. They just bring me on set. I don't care. Just take my idea, steal it away. So yeah. And, that it was kind of, I wanted to do something like that. And so I just kind of taught myself how I had a need. So I filled it, you know? It was all in iMovie and Photoshop. I mean, it was really just very ramshackle. I don't know how any of these programs actually work. I just was kind of slapping it together until it looked the way I wanted it to look, which is also kind of how I live my life in general. but yeah, you know, same with the recaps. It was all just kind of like learning it on the fly and just kind of, you know, nudging it and massaging it and figuring out the process until it did what I wanted it to do.
So basically people shouldn't feel super intimidated by you, that they can go out and teach themselves this kind of thing.
Oh yeah. I mean, if I can do it, anybody can do it. this is not, I'm not like a genius, like person in any sense of the word. Like it was literally, I just drew each frame in Photoshop and then I put it into iMovie as the little still photos with no Ken Burns effect, which I don't know why that's the default option in iMovie. Anyway, and then I just put the song over it and I edited it until it matched up with the song and that was it. You know, I'm very like low budget.
Well, I mean, okay, not to disagree with you, but I have to say, you did it over the course of a weekend, right? That's like amazing. Yeah. Like you shouldn't downplay that. You are so dedicated.
Stop, God.
You were like, hey, I have no freaking clue how to do this, but I'm going to do it. And that is so incredibly cool because so many people would just be like me, would be like, oh God, there's no way I could ever do that and like never do anything like that. But you're just like, you just walk right in. You're just like, I'm going to grab this bull by the horns. I'm going
to
make it do what I want.
Too
and
reckless
ride
to
it
fail.
Out of here. Like, it's awesome. Yeah. I mean, it's just really cool.
You.
I mean, it was incredible seeing it. Just and knowing that you have no animation experience and you dove right in without like knowing how to use this stuff, you're just like, I got this. I'm gonna do it.
God, I'm blushing. Stop.
Well, it's great and it's really inspiring. As somebody who has been, you know, like I know I keep saying I'm old. My birthday's next month, if that's any hint. But I've been around for a long time, and so seeing, you know, people like you get so involved and like committed and doing really fun, exciting new things. I find that really inspiring because it makes me want to try new and different things and kind of like gives me the energy to try stuff like that again or to push myself to do new things. And that's so important. It's very easy to let yourself go stagnant, I guess.
But now it's your turn, Dawn, basically, because you do something that pretty much no one else does, / we haven't really seen happen in a fandom before, which is that you're rather, you know, well, I don't know if the lucrative is the right word, but popular tea business or tea shop, at least. Which is such an amazing and weird thing that exists, this whole Adagio tea blend thing.
It is. It really is weird. It's definitely different.
Like, it's weird that this is a thing that exists, like, full stop. Yeah. But it's pretty amazing.
It is. And honestly, I can't take credit for the concept. Adagio's been doing this whole blend-your-own tea blend thing for a really long time. And you can just add a label of whatever you want. It was actually my friend Kara who started doing fandom teas on there. And this is a while ago, she started blending Sherlock teas. Those were her first teas. And then she expanded from there. But her teas are just like insanely popular, like really, really, really popular. And so other people started doing tea blends and stuff like that. And I never really had like any kind of idea to do anything tea related until I was in the Teen Wolf fandom. And, you know, Kara's a friend of mine. She's a local fellow artist friend. And I was like, I kind of think I want to do Teen Wolf Tea Blend. And she's like, that's so cool. I was thinking of doing one too. And I was like, well, are you cool? She's like, Meg, I do not own tea blends on Adagio. I just make them. You just do whatever. And I was like, sweet. And I honestly did not think more than like five people would care. I really didn't think anyone would care about it at all. I was kind of just doing it because I wanted to do it. And I thought it would be fun. And I did. And people wound up really liking it. And I think it's awesome. I'm definitely not the first person to do a fandom tea blend. Kara is like the queen. She has so many teas. It's kind of insane. Her house, like when she brings the tea in to take with her to shows, it's like, it's crazy. But yeah, it was definitely, it was such a really interesting experience. And I love tea so much more than I did when I first started it. So like I liked tea before, but now like, I feel like I really understand tea. And God, that sounds so weird to say.
I understand
what makes tea good and what makes tea not good. And, I don't know. I just feel like I'm able to appreciate it much more than I used to, but it's a lot of fun. And Kara definitely got me started on it, and I feel really inspired to do more along those lines.
Yes, well, please. This is kind of, I mean, I want to get a little bit in depth here about the blending process and how you've just said that you feel like you kind of understand like how to make up a tea now, and you know, like about what works and like what doesn't work. So you've got like, you know, a lot of ones, obviously mostly Teen Wolf. You had a few like Star Trek Supernatural and stuff as well. Mm-hmm. But how do you assign sort of flavors to a character? Like, and even with the process with the Adagio, if you are the creator of the tea blend, do they mm-hmm. like send you a sample? It's like, oh yeah, this is what I wanted. And then you're like, oh no, I'm going to change it. Or like, are you sort of doing it blind, like just online when you actually create the mix, or how does it work?
Well, generally Adagio doesn't send you any samples. They do have sample kits you can buy that has samples of like their additives and different types of tea you can use in it, but their tea selection for blending is massive. So having a full collection of all the samples is really hard. What I do is I just blend a bag and I buy it and I send it to myself. So when I first started doing it, I spent money
getting the blends right.
I spent some money to make it happen. And now it's nice because like I get a lot of tea points from the sales. So when I test new things, I just use my tea points. So I don't actually have to spend a ton of money on it anymore. But at first it was definitely like Derek's blend, 8 bags of tea.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah. Yeah, no, Derek's blend was impossible for me because getting that right apple and cinnamon flavor to it was really hard. And so it wasn't just about like what types of tea. You have to choose the percentages of what tea. I remember one time I got it and it smelled good. In the bag, it smelled great. I made myself a cup of the tea and it tasted like hot water. Like it mm-hmm. tasted like nothing. And I was like, how have I gotten to this point where I'm blending tea that tastes like nothing? So Derek's was really hard. Other teas, like first try, like the dark oak tea, first try. Wound up being really good, and I was just like, yes, this is how I wish all of them went. So
that one, but I just have to interject for a second.
Sure.
Because I am so obsessed with all of Dawn's teas, guys. Like, I have so many of
Karen
them.
Karen didn't used to drink tea at no. all, so you know.
Really?
No. Now it's like, it's so bad. It's such an addiction. But I have a whole bunch of them. I've tried most of them, I think. But that dark oak one, I think I bugged you like 3 or 4 times. Like, when are you going to get it done? When is it going to be for sale? Because I need to buy a whole tin of it. And the day that happened, oh, it was so good. But that one is just delicious. It's my favorite.
Thank you so much. I'm really happy with how it turned out. It's interesting because the Sheriff's Tea actually has a very similar base makeup like Dark Oak does. They're different teas, but they both have mates in them. Mm-hmm. And so they're very interesting because they're different flavor palettes, but they're both really good and they have like similar tea types in them. But yeah, regarding the flavors and the different, totally cut me off if I'm rambling too much about
tea. No, go ahead.
This really happens to me. Mm-hmm. But with the different flavors, I feel like everybody has like a different opinion or different feeling about a character. And there are lots of other Teen Wolf blenders on Adagio too. There's some really great ones. Roxanne does really great ones. And I know Allison, she's really good about staying on top of new characters and that kind of thing. There's some great tea blenders out there. And you can go and see, and there's people who love buying different Teen Wolf teas from all the different blenders and trying them all out. It's really cool. It's like a it's like a big tea group family now, I think. It's fun. But we all have, you can go look at how we blend each blend the different characters, and you get very different like feelings from each of the characters from the blend. So I think it's a very personal thing too, to decide, you know, what flavor best suits a character. I actually remember somebody did a review on my Derek tea, and they said, I really love this tea, but it just doesn't really, like, it doesn't make me think of Derek. And I always felt like Derek had, like, a soft, gooey center, like, beyond all the gruffness. And I feel like the payoff of season 4, I was like, my tea suits him perfectly now. Like, I feel, I feel so validated that my tea and him are in alignment, and I made the right choices for the tea. It is so ridiculous. That is my life now.
No, it's amazing. Well, I want to know, like, if you can tell us, because obviously we did our sort of little tea party thing at ByteCon, and you sort of spoke a little bit about a couple of the blends there. Yeah. But for all of those people, you know, that weren't there, how, like, I don't know if you want to pick a particular blend and just, like, why, I guess, like, how and why you would pick, like, particular flavors for that character, or, like, what a flavor means to you. Because chocolate to you might represent something that, like, another person's tea, you know, another tea blender, chocolate might represent something else to them. And it's really weird to talk about, like, what chocolate represents and things. But yeah. I don't know if there's a particular, like, blend that you could, like, easily take us through in terms of, like, what it means for the character.
Right. I think the ones that I feel like the easiest to talk about would be, I mean, I guess I could probably dissect everything, but the ones that I think come forth the most is my Scott blend, which I've talked about before. The Scott blend, I think when I think about Scott, especially in those first few seasons, he's a very warm character. He's still a very warm character. I feel like he's changed a lot though. I actually kind of want to do a new Scott blend. Not getting rid of the old one, but just like doing a new one for kind of how he's changed. But I always picture him very warm, very like accepting and just kind of comforting. Like I wanted to create a tea that was like comforting and warm. So I tried to think of all the flavors that I like that makes me feel like comforted. And he's also a very sweet person, so I wanted to get the sweetness across. So I chose to go with like chocolate and caramel to kind of bring that all together. So that's why I went with those flavors for him. For Peter though, Peter's was really easy actually. Because the almond oolong is just a little bit, because it's kind of a little bit like marzipan, like a little bit marzipan-y, the almond oolong. And then the lapsang, which is unreal. It's just an unruly tea. And the weird thing is lapsang on its own, it really does taste very good. It's just very strong, and the scent stays. So I knew I had to have that in it. It also smells like burnt things. And by combining those teas together, you get something that smells like beef jerky, which is a little gross. But
I think Peter would appreciate that.
Yeah, you know, but the tea still tastes okay. And that's always my thing. Like, I want the tea to smell good, smell like the character. I want the flavor to be similar to the scent, because it drives me crazy if the smell doesn't match the flavor. I get really hung up on that. Like, I want it all to be in alignment, and I want it to complement the character. So I get a little hung up on that. But like for Boyd, because of the thing with his sister and working at the ice rink, I wanted to include something a little bit like sort of like that breath of air in the cold that you feel. So I included a little mint in it, and a little aniseed just to like earthy it up a little bit, from that. So sometimes it'll just be one element that I pull in that kind of like tips the scale towards that character. And other times it's like something really heavy, like the lapsang, which there is just like, it just slaps you in the face. It's so strong. But for dark oak, I wanted to choose like earthy but fruity flavors for her, because I felt like that would, because of in relation to the Nemeton and basically almost coming back from the dead, I wanted kind of that earthiness, but also to have like sort of the ripe flavor of fruit with it too.
I could honestly listen to you talk about tea for like literally hours, Dawn. Like,
oh God, you're too nice. You're too nice. Just, I get real caught up on it.
Taryn, any questions about tea? You've got a lot of them.
I can't, because we would be here for 3 hours, because I find it so interesting the way that you pick out those scents. And it's like, I don't think about what these characters like smell like, you know what I mean? Like how that translates. No. How that translates into scents. But then I'll open a bag and I'm like, oh my God, this is perfect. For example, one of my best friends, I'm just sort of getting her into the tea as well. Dark oak is also her favorite, FYI. And I handed her, Derek's, and she smelled it and she goes, this smells like man. Like, and it was the perfect combination that reminded her of Derek and this sort of like manly man, type of thing. And so it's just, it's fascinating to
Derek's,
me.
Does the Derek tea smell like that Chris Evans Yankee candle?
It's very like, I like it, 'cause it's very cinnamon apple-y, like a cross between like, it doesn't have the tang of cider. It's like a smooth non-cider apple pie type flavor.
It just works. At least that's what
I'm glad. And for me, it's like, it's not necessarily what the character would smell like or taste like. Like I try to get, it's like an aura, not the sound. Not the sound. Very new age or anything. But it's very much like the aura of the character that you're trying to like condense into like a scent and taste.
Yeah. Well, you do it very well.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. So switching gears a little bit here. One of the things that I really love doing is going to conventions, and actually, we've all met up with each other at different conventions at different times. We mentioned BiteCon and HowlerCon, and there have been some other ones too. But what's your favorite part about conventions, both as just a regular fan and as an artist who sometimes gets to go to like the artist alley and actually put their stuff out to buy or to sell?
Well, this is, I feel like Dawn's going to be able to answer this much more eloquently than I, because she, like, this is like her whole business. I don't go to conventions that often, and I wish I did. I just usually don't have, the time or the ability to, you know, travel around. But the couple I've been to have been really, really fun. I do a couple local, like, comics conventions here in New York. But I mean, my favorite part is always just being able to talk to people and, like, and vibe with them and, like, you know, talk, especially it's easier at a very, you know, at a specific fan convention, because you all know why you're here, you know, like it's really easy to start a conversation with people. And it's like, it's so much fun to like, to connect with people, especially to be like, oh, like I know about you from the internet. I totally like recognize your face or your handle or whatever. And, you know, getting to meet people and meet new people and meet old friends and just like connect and bond over, you know, the stuff that we have in common, like our love for this show or this comic or this, you know, these people. And I mean, being very lucky in the, I went to BiteCon last year and I went to HowlerCon, this past November. They've, you know, getting to hang out with the people who make the show is just such an honor, and it's so humbling, and there's nothing really like it. And I try not to get too starstruck about it, but it's like, it's really, really cool to meet the people behind the thing and be able to tell them in person, like, thank you for doing this. And thank you for, you know, bringing this into my life. And I really appreciate it. And here I drew a picture of you. Please take it. I love you. Bye. Like, you know, it's like, it's like really, really, it's, there's something really, really special about that. And I feel very, very lucky to be able to be a part of that and to have, you know, been able to talk to my heroes about it and, you know, the whole thing. So I'm being corny.
No, it's cute. I like it. I agree. Those are great. Those are great things about conventions, getting to, you know, meet people that you talk to online And getting to hang out with them in person and meet them in person. And then, you know, getting to make new friends and then just enjoying, you know, everybody having warm, fuzzy feelings about the same thing that you like. And conventions are just really wonderful for that reason. And then getting to, like Kendra said, getting to engage with the cast and crew is just so wonderful. And BiCon was really great for that, just because so many of the editors and the crew came by our table and mm-hmm. looked at our stuff. And Kendra, didn't some of the crew commission you to do portraits of them? Or it was awesome.
The special effects dudes, Eric Porn and the crew over there, were there doing, they were like doing wolf makeup on people and like talking about, what they do. But yeah, they asked if I would do a portrait of them. And I was like, yeah, I totally will. And then, you know, Jeff himself coming over and like buying stuff. I'm like, no, your money is no good here, Jeff. You turn around, you get out of here. And he's like, no, here, take my money.
I know. I was like, you can just accept this. He's like, no, I'm giving you guys money. And it's like, but you made this.
But
he was extremely cool. That was definitely amazing getting to meet him. I truly cannot remember anything I said to him. Cannot. Like that whole 4 or 5 minutes. I couldn't process it. It was awful. Like I wasn't even, there wasn't even a buildup, so I didn't have time to shake or be nervous. It just happened. And then it's mm-hmm. like,
yeah, that's kind of how it was with all, it went, like when Cinqua came by and it was, that was too much for me.
Yeah.
Kendra, I remember you being on the floor a lot. Like I'd come over and you were just like under your table.
Yeah. Why?
It was really overwhelming. I need someone to be like fanning me or like misting me down with cool water. Like I couldn't take it. Like,
you know, I have to say, Kendra, you say that, but you were very cool the whole time. You just were very cool. Right.
Whatever, Dot.
No, I mean, I honestly wish I had your cool level of cool because I just felt like an awkward turtle the whole time.
Okay, you're the one who is like super chill and super friendly, despite you saying that you aren't good at talking to people and you like can't talk to the actors or anything. You were so chill and you never would know. Meanwhile, I'm like climbing over a table and lying on the ground anytime like I walk through the room. So
I like how we both remember each other's interactions very differently than how we actually. But no, it was great. That I think that's what made BiCon so much fun, was getting that engagement, not just with the actors, but with like the rest of the crew and talking to the editors. And it was just it was very, very cool. When it comes to conventions, like in general, I know Kendra mentioned that I do this all the time. It's like my job is going to conventions and selling my artwork. So most of the time when I do conventions, it's just work. Like people are like, have fun at your convention. And I'm like, well, it's kind of work, but thanks. I know what you were going for there. So a lot of times it's work. It's very exhausting. The hours are long. And as somebody who is like social very sporadically, I am a homebody. Sometimes I get over peopled. I don't want to be around a lot of people. So doing a long convention can be very, very, very taxing. So in general, for me, conventions are just like work, bill paying, right? For Teen Wolf conventions, that is not the case. Like there are a few conventions I've done where my intention is to be with my friends and to enjoy it. And I can't do conventions unless I'm selling at them. So I absolutely have to sell at a convention because I couldn't afford to do it otherwise. So getting that opportunity for BiteCon and HowlerCon was really fantastic because not only do I get to go and see my friends, like Kendra, who I'd never met in person. It was so cool. I got to see you at BiteCon. And then HowlerCon too. It's just really nice. Like I get to do that and it feels definitely like a vacation rather than work, which is what winds up happening with a lot of my other conventions. So I think that the Teen Wolf conventions definitely have a lot going for them in that case. So
that's cool.
Did I answer the question? Oh my God.
Yes. I have a further sort of question about that and about sort of selling fan art, if it's not too lowbrow to talk about kind of money, not like how much or anything, don't worry, but like the selling factor. Because, okay, in fandom, obviously, like, a lot, you know, fan artists, you know, they put stuff on the internet for free, like, you know, in the same way, like, fan fiction writers, you know, you contribute to the fandom as a fan for free, right. But obviously, like, conventions have always involved, like, selling, you know, a fan art, like, physical copies and stuff like that, and yeah. I'm just wondering if you guys have any opinion on why that's, like, quote-unquote, like, acceptable, or if even if you know anything about the copyright, because, you know, if I wrote a fan fiction and then tried to sell it, I couldn't, if you know what I mean. Not that I think that I should, but I couldn't. But fan art and sort of fan craft, it is like a legal and like lucrative kind of thing. Like, do you know the history of that, or like why that's an acceptable item you can buy when it's not like quote unquote official, as opposed to like the copyright issues with fan fiction?
I'm suddenly terrified.
No. It's totally it's like, I'm not trying to scare you or
anything like that.
Like, I'm curious.
No, I mean, I don't really know. I'm totally not the person. Don't, do you know any? I'm not the person.
I can tell you my feelings on it.
If
you want to hear them.
Yes, please.
Well, I guess that's why I'm on this podcast, because you're interested in something I have to say. Okay, so my thoughts, the whole selling fan art thing has been going around for like a very long time. And I think some of it ties back into comics, I think, because the intellectual property that belongs to Marvel and DC specifically, it's not necessarily one item owned by one person. It's kind of owned by a company. And then the people who work for that company, there's like hundreds and hundreds of artists and writers work for these companies and produce things for them.
Yeah.
And while DC and Marvel are both pretty, like, you know, they're going to defend their copyright, they also understand that fan art is a big part of their their world. So you have art, there's artists that they have hired to produce books who will turn around and make new prints of characters and then sell them. Mm-hmm. And the editors like work with it. They don't, unless somebody's making like high profit from their intellectual copyright, they're going to kind of overlook it. At least that's the impression that I've gotten from all of that. They, as long as you're not selling work that you sold to them, then, mm-hmm. Like, if somebody was paid to do something for them and they turn around and resell it, that's not okay. But, like, for the most part, they want to give artists the freedom to do that, to interact with their fan base that way. And no, most artists don't make, like, I mean, nobody's out there making, like, $1 billion a year. If we were, that would definitely end
that
it
would
very
rule.
Quickly. So those are my thoughts. As for the fan fiction versus fan art, I have literally no reason to say why fanfic writers shouldn't be able to sell their work. I cannot say there's no rational reason why they shouldn't be able to do that, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But, you know, copyright, it just depends on what companies want to do with how they handle their copyright. And I guess in some cases, fan art is okay because the names aren't being used, maybe. But it just depends. I really couldn't say, but I have never had trouble. And if you just watch for creators who say they don't want their work sold as fan art, as long as you respect that, then I think it's like
as long, at least with like a lot of the big companies, I mean, with independent, like, I know, you know, Welcome to Night Vale are very adamant about not selling any fan art because they're a very small business. Mm-hmm. But I think with larger creators, I think generally as long as you're not taking money away from the studio and like whatever they deem taking money away from the studio, it's pretty much all right. And especially with something like Teen Wolf, you know, and being on a network like MTV, being like social media and that kind of virality that comes with a fandom community and working with your fans like that, there, I mean, it's free press. It's, you know, people are doing all of the work for you, you know, and and they don't want to step in the way of that. And it's also, it's a very, you know, obviously there are, you know, fan artists and fan creators who have been around for decades doing it, but it's also it's a very new thing for a company to be interested in, you know,
yeah,
it's, and so it's Definitely. really, it does them no good to try to shut that stuff down. You know, that's only going to, you know, sour your fans to you, you know.
Yeah.
Especially when you see the fans that are enjoying it so much, and then they're doing all of this work for usually for free. And if they do sell it, then it's like, you know, it's not for a wild profit. It's not like bootleg DVDs or something.
Right.
So it's like you really want to encourage that kind of fandom interaction and that kind of thing, because it's like, hey, it's less work for you. And every time the you know, the Teen Wolf Twitter gets to tweet about an image and at the same time advertise their show, and nobody at MTV had to do any of that work. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, it's perfect for them, and it's great for it's great for the creators too, because every time, you know, the hundreds and thousands of followers of the Teen Wolf Twitter get to see your work and, you know, see your name attached to it. That's a lot of, you know, free press for you too. So it's very mutually beneficial.
It is. I agree with that. And I think the Teen Wolf, like social media people and PR people have really like tried to engage with fans. And I'm not going to talk about like the success rate on that, but I feel like they're the first, I feel like that's a whole other conversation, but I like, as someone who adores the fourth wall and has lived by it for a very long time, it was very hard for me to come around to this, but to see, like, you know, see it appreciated and see people saying, hey, this is really cool, is really neat. And I think it's cool for people who work on the show to say, oh, wow, look at what these people made because they like our show that we work on. I mean, they're not like most of the people who work on Teen Wolf. Yeah, it's their job, but, you know, they're not going to not care about it. They're not going to not have feelings for what they do day in and day out. So I feel like they also get to feel like they're appreciated. And it's completely different from how Supernatural was for the longest time, because there was no connection between fans and the Supernatural. Like, I remember, what was it? Kripke used to go to the Television Without Pity forums and read people's opinions about the show, and it was awful. That is why we lost like a whole bunch of female characters. Oh, yeah. It was because of that. So it was definitely Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say it's a fine line, you know. And yeah. I think you were kind of touching on that a second ago. It's a fine line with interaction of and what constitutes, you know, listening and engaging with fans versus doing fan service, which is not ever good for I would go so far as to make it a blanket rule that fan service is never good for any sort of media. Like, if you're succumbing to fan service, it's nobody wins in the end, you know. But, you know, go ahead.
Oh, no, I agree. And I feel like that appreciation is really great. So you see, like, the Hannibal writers room and the Hannibal Twitter and, like,
they're the best fandom. Hannibal fandom, in terms of the way that the writers interact and the way that they handle their fandom, it's, like, not too much and it's not too little, and it's the best. It's just...
It's really nice. Like, I appreciate how much they care about it. I'm trying to remember, I think it's Betty Bloodshed did a Nightmare Stag costume.
Oh, yeah.
And she ran into Brian Fuller.
At the convention.
And he was like, oh my gosh, I have to get a picture with you. Like, it was very cute. Like,
yeah.
That's so nice.
And so it's cool. Like, I love that. I love that interaction and the way the fans can kind of tell the creators that they like their stuff. It's a way to tell the creators that you like their stuff, and then the creators get to, like, engage back and say, we really like this thing you did. We think it's really cool, you know? Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I like that. I definitely think there is a line. Mm-hmm. There is a line. But I think all these new shows are slowly figuring it out and understanding that they have to, you know, like, touch the fan base a little bit, like a little bit.
If we can just get close,
not,
you know,
no, I'm sorry.
You know,
second base, maybe nothing
under the shirt, but over the bra.
Exactly.
But, yeah. Well, and I think that it's if we can get past the point where people on TV pull up a bunch of smutty fan art and laugh at it. If we can get to the point where we stop doing that about fandom, it would be so great. I would love that. I would love for people to stop reading aloud excerpts from fan fiction to embarrass the stars and the creators of shows. That would be really cool. It's a respect thing, you know? It's like, and I feel like, hopefully, it's, you know, media is like getting to the point where they're less like, oh my God, fan fiction, is it a thing? And more like, oh, this is actually, like, it's cool that fans are doing this. And I think that it's slowly but surely getting there.
Well, yeah. We must hope so.
Mm-hmm.
Dawn, on a small tangent, I actually just wanted to ask about, like, how selling at cons is, like, your, like, career slash chosen job, like, at least at the moment, and, like, how long you've been doing that, and what that's like, I guess. Like, do you just go to a lot of, like, kind of general, like, multi-fandom, like, you know, like, sort of pop culture cons and take a variety of art, or do you do, like, stuff specifically for, like, different fandom cons, or, like, how much art do you have to produce, like, in order to do that kind of circuit, I guess?
Well, I guess it's different for everyone, but it's good. You have to kind of, like, find your pacing for yourself, and you have to kind of, like, cultivate a following, people who like coming and talking to you at conventions and, like, buying your art. I mean, I have people who come to conventions specifically to come buy prints for me, which is really incredibly cool. Like, that's really awesome. Mm-hmm. But that's also really important for me to, like, keep up with the pace of how conventions go. So you have to, like, make sure that you have, you know, stuff that's popular. You have to have new things, because, you know, sometimes I'll have people come to buy stuff, and if I don't have anything new for a specific show, that's the show they're looking for. So they'll come say hi, but they won't necessarily buy anything, which is fine. Like, I appreciate that. I love getting to talk to people about this. I know I say it's a chore, and that's just because I'm bad at social stuff, honestly, but it is really cool. Like, it blows my mind when I think about it. Like, conventions are work, but it is amazing work. Like, I really love it. Like, if I'm going to complain about something, this is the work I want to complain about. There's literally no other job on the planet that I want to complain about. Like, I want to complain about this job. So it means a lot to me. It's hard because you have to kind of anticipate what people are going to want and kind of understand what people are looking for and find things that will resonate with people. So a lot of times doing fan art is really important because people won't be able to connect with original characters as well because they don't know who they are.
Yeah.
So that can be really difficult. I do a lot of fantasy art too. That sells really well because fantasy is something that people can connect to, like people who like mermaids or fauns or so people who like that kind of thing, they can make a connection there. I have one girl who comes by my booth and goes, "Have you done mermaids yet? Because I want to buy your mermaid." And I'm like, all right, I swear I will have mermaids this next season. I promise. So I'm on the trek for mermaids now. But mermaids. So it's interesting. I hope I'm hoping I'm like angling into your question.
Yeah, no, for sure.
My days involve like debating like what am I going to draw, what shows I'm going to. And I tend to do mostly comic book conventions and anime conventions and then kind of deciding what to draw. Drawing it, hoping it comes out well. Because there have been times where I've made stuff and no one buys it. Like, I'm like, this will work. This will sell really well. No, it doesn't sell at all. Excellent. So you kind of have to, like, guess about what people are going to do. You're going to go out on a limb because you're putting money into it because you're printing things. So it's like, will it go well? Will it fail? Let's find out. So it's a lot of testing, a lot of, like, looking at your fellow artists and, like, engaging each other and trying to figure out what's working for them and would it work for you and them picking your brain. So it's definitely complicated, a lot more complicated than I thought it would be going into it. But it's good. It's good and it's definitely challenging. So I like it a lot. And I won't say I make a ton of money, but I pay bills and that's the important part. So
yeah. My final question, Dawn, sorry about this whole convention as a job thing, because I'm very interested in it, is do you kind of ever, like, look at, like, a con, you know, and who the guests are and, like, draw stuff specifically for that fandom, even if you're not, like, really in that fandom? Or do you just stick to the stuff that you love and then the stuff that's, like, not really, like, your, like, you know, not really specific, like the fantasy things and stuff like that?
Yeah, honestly, it kind of depends on the convention. Like, when I do Teen Wolf conventions, I always try to make sure I have individual pictures of the characters that the act actors play, of the actors who are going to be there.
Yeah.
So, like, when I went to ICON, which was an Atlanta Teen Wolf convention, they had Adelaide and Tyler Hoechlin there. So I wanted to have a print with both of them on it. So I did that. So sometimes I will do that. Generally, at comic book conventions, they're just so big, I generally don't.
Say if there's like a random Game of Thrones person, you're like, I've never watched Game of Thrones, but I'm going to draw some Game of Thrones art. Is that like not a thing?
You know, I actually really want to do some Game of Thrones art because I actually really like Game of Thrones.
Oh, that's
but,
good.
But yeah, it depends because sometimes they have so many guests, it's like a gamble.
Yeah.
And I also have to think about the sort of people coming to my table.
Yeah.
Like, I get a lot of people who are Teen Wolf fans, obviously, because I draw a lot of Teen Wolf. I would say I draw too much Teen Wolf, even, but I really like it, so I'm drawing a lot of it. So when I have Teen Wolf fans come by the booth, I always try to think about things that they like as well as Teen Wolf, you know? So if they see something else, so I have, like, Supernatural, and I've always liked Supernatural, but that's, like, a good tie-in. I had Glee fan art at one point. It was Kurt. It was one picture of Kurt, because I thought he was super adorable.
I love him.
And I think I've sold, like, three of them. I guess the idea is that you have to kind of, like, gauge what's going to sell. I actually had a pinup of Captain America, because I love, like, drawing girl versions of Captain America.
Mm-hmm.
I love
mm-hmm.
Captain America. He's like my favorite character.
Love it.
I just love him. And so I did a pinup version and I was like, yeah, this will sell well. This is cool. I'll have pinup Captain America. Man, it is very average to low selling, people disinterested. It's, I don't know. It's so I've kind of had to just roll with it. It's definitely, you have to know the audience of the people coming to your booth and also like, keep in mind the culture of the con that you're in. So it's a lot. It's definitely a guessing game a lot of the time. So
mm-hmm.
so it's a little hard.
And how many cons did you do in the last year? Do you know?
See, this is a sign that I must be much more organized this year. It would be very hard for me to tell you how many cons
like,
I did.
I was doing
year.
Like 10, 40, like somewhere in between 10
probably
and 40.
Like, 10 to 15.
Below 200.
10 to 15. Yeah,
okay.
Seriously, 200 it feels like. It feels like 200. I did one in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee.
That's not a real place.
It is a
That's
real place,
real.
And you have to come visit it with me during Christmas. Because
was it beautiful?
It is like, think of America, the cheesiest parts of America. The
and that's
classic
it?
Cheesy fun parts, though. Like, not the awful parts, but like the cheesy fun parts. And it's Christmas.
Like funnel cake
everything.
Cheesy?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, like, oh, my God. It's literally the cheesiest place I've ever been to. But it's very heartwarming because it's just very sincere, but also really
Aww.
Cheesy. There's, like, lights everywhere. There's, like, at any rate, so I did this con, and it was not a very good con for me. But I went ahead and got a table for next year because the atmosphere was just really adorable.
Aww.
So it's also the first time I've ever seen, like, 20 pancake houses in the same, like, 10-mile radius. It was crazy.
That's amazing.
And not chains, like individual pancake houses called pancake houses. It's weird. All right. But, yeah, you should go. Come with me next year. Fun.
Pigeon Forge. Got it.
Pigeon Forge. It's right next to Gatlinburg. So if you ever hear about Gatlinburg.
Never heard about
right.
that.
Okay.
But okay.
Yeah. But yeah, no, it's interesting. Definitely a lot of interesting shows out there. You meet a lot of interesting people, but it's a challenge trying to stay on your toes. This has been not a good year sales-wise, so I've got to find a new angle and jump that angle and, like,
you can do it.
Get stuff a little bit, so.
Believe in you.
Thank you.
Just kidding. I love you.
I need that. I need a little, little belief in myself here.
Love you.
Oh.
I love you too. Hug pile.
Well, I think we already answered my next question. Throughout the episode, we figured out what other fandoms they generally...
I suppose. Yeah, do
really?
Either...
I don't know. We should talk about One Direction some more, maybe.
No, we should. Either of you guys have any other things that you wanted to mention in terms of, like, fandoms that you really love drawing for or, like, want to get into drawing for or admire the art for, even if you're not, like, in that fandom, I suppose, that, you know, like, anything we haven't touched on?
I love the fan artists in the Hannibal fandom. Mm-hmm. I always find their stuff is really, really beautiful. And when True Detective was on TV, there were some really amazing pieces that came out of that. And I don't know where those people came from or where they went, but they were amazing. I was really, really impressed. I feel like the weirder and darker the show is, like, for some reason,
the nicer, like, the fandom is, right? It's so weird. Yeah, that's why the Glee fandom is so freaking horrible. Like, it's so weird. But yeah, carry on. Now, I've noticed this as well.
Yeah, I mean, basically, you know, actually, I'm going to give a shout out to my dear, dear friend Renka, who does amazing fan art for every single fandom she's in. So anything that Renka's drawing for is my favorite.
Little Renka? Is that who you're talking about?
Yes.
Renka? My love. Oh, I love her so much. We're doing a fan book together.
That's so exciting.
I'm really excited about it. I can't really talk too much about it because it's a not safe for work fan book, but.
Okay, well then I have to get a copy. I'm going to buy one from you.
I will just give you one. How about that?
No, I'm going to throw money at you until you accept it.
We'll work it out.
Anyway, and Dot bickering aside,
sorry.
I don't know. I'm really bad at getting into fandoms because I'm actually, even shows that I really, really, really love, I'm terrible at keeping up with them. I'm like, I don't know why. I'm horrible at keeping up with shows and being on top of stuff. So it takes, I can only really be involved in like one fandom at a time. And so now that, you know, Teen Wolf went, you know, off season. And then, so now I've been doing a bunch of One Direction stuff. And then as soon as Teen Wolf starts back up again, I'm probably going to just like completely switch back over and be pretty much exclusively a Teen Wolf blog. Mm. So it takes a lot for me to get into a show, even if I know I'm going to love it. I have no patience, and I always just kind of want to get to like the fun part where I know all of the characters and I'm like, don't have to watch 12 hours of television.
Just want to know everything.
Yeah. I mean, I've been meaning to get into a bunch of shows, but no, I'm usually just, I get really inspired by seeing other people's art and seeing other people's like creations and stuff, but I'm just terrible at it. I never end up watching the shows that I'm like, oh, that's so pretty. And then I just give up. Like Game of Thrones. I've fully accepted I'm never going to watch Game of Thrones. I'm like, I can't do that to myself.
No, it's painful. Don't watch it. I'm waiting until the whole thing's over so I know everything that happens before watching it. So, I can't handle it. The end of the first season just like gutted me. I was so upset. So I, ever since then, I've just been like, okay, Game of Thrones, yeah, I'm gonna spoil myself like crazy until not you're today, done, and then I will watch you.
Hannibal fandom definitely is a big one, I think, with their art and creation and their attitude. The Hannibal fandom got me to watch Hannibal. Like, I was like, this looks amazing, I'm gonna watch it. And it was definitely like through fandom. But yeah, I was curious about, like, you guys doing, like, I guess, like, original art, like non-fandom art, and, like, do you, like,
What is not fandom art? I don't understand.
I don't know, but just, like, do you feel like you need, like, there to be a story behind your original art? Like, or, like, there are plenty of fanfiction writers out there that only write fanfiction because they don't make their own stories behind it, I guess. So I was just wondering if that's the case, like, for you guys, like, with any original art, like, do you have a lot of story behind your own original art, or do you sort of get something out of just doing like something not attached to a story as well?
Yeah, I mean, I honestly don't do enough original art. There's less instant gratification with posting original art online.
Yeah, definitely.
So, which is not discouraging, but it's like more fun to, you know, do fan art and have people go, oh my god, and like recognize the characters. I mean, I've been working and I've been meaning to up my game in terms of like doing original art and original stories, but yeah, I mean, since my background is in comics, I tend to, when I'm doing art, I mean, I have like a couple like original comic ideas floating around in my head, and I build stories from that. And I mean, story creations and character creation is always my favorite part. So I do end up doing a lot of that, but a lot of the original art I end up doing is usually just like kind of like therapeutic. Like I draw like a deer or like, you know, a bouquet of flowers or something. Like it's sort of very weird and abstract. But that's mostly just to like burn off steam, for myself. Cause it's very different than what my fan art ends up being. So yeah, I don't know.
No, fair enough.
For me, I guess It's hard because when I was younger, I did a lot of original character stuff. But as I've gotten older, I've gotten a lot more shy, like, to share that. Because it feels like a even more personal, I guess, to share that kind of thing. And
like, I've also what if become... somebody doesn't like your character?
Yeah, like, I it makes me nervous. Like, I look back at my little Mary Sues that I made up when I was back in the day. Like, you know, power to the Mary Sue. That's, like, many young girls have expressed themselves through their Mary Sues. And I think it's become such a negative term.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, you shouldn't make fun of young women, like, finding their path by creating these characters that they find to be fulfilling. Mm. But also, it just... For me, my characters that I made then are not fulfilling characters now, unless I wanted to, like, revamp them and change them completely. So the other problem is I'm really a bad storyteller, like, really bad. Like, no. I'm not good at it. No, I really, it's so hard. Like, I'll come up with these ideas, and then the ideas will get so big, and I'm like, that'll literally take me so long to do, so I'm just not going to do it. Like, I have the worst attention span. So for original characters, it's hard. But I'm kind of working on creating original characters that will have a story behind them that I can enjoy drawing a lot and just, you know, maybe going from there. Like, I'm trying not to put too high pressure on myself for stuff like that. And it is important to do original work. I do some original work. I should probably do more. But I'm kind of just embracing the fantasy things that I like the centaur girls, and like, I love centaurs and fawns and dryad, you know, classic fantasy stuff that I really like. And I'm trying to embrace that and then reimagine it and do something new with it, for me at least. So I'm trying that. So that's my kind of avenue into original art, but I do want to have original characters. I think the people who I see who do have them are very fulfilled by it. So I kind of want to, like, feel that again, you know? So, well, that's my thoughts on it.
We shall support you if you make that choice.
Thank you.
Thank you. So both you guys have actually been featured on Hypeable.com in our Artist Spotlight articles, which I really love doing. And one of my favorite questions to ask is what kind of advice the artist would give to other artists, because I think that a lot of people get discouraged by trying to create either original art or fan art, and it's important to just, like, keep going no matter what, and you guys have a lot of experience with that. So what would you tell other artists?
I mean, I've had people message me before being like, hey, like, I'm an artist. They're always like, oh, I'm not very good. Like, I want to be an artist, but I don't know how to improve. Like, how do you get better? Like, how do you improve? And my advice is always just keep drawing. Like, that's the only, I mean, you know, like, little kids, like, every little kid draws, like, every kindergartner loves to draw. And at a certain point, as kids get older, most of them stop drawing because they realize that, wait, this doesn't look like what I want it to look like. I must not be very good. And they stop. And it's really sad because it's like, no, like, if you just, like, just keep going. And the people who keep going are generally the ones who end up doing art or, like, you know, pursuing art. And I think it's important to just, you know, to, even when you feel like you suck, and even if when nothing is turning out the right way, like, if you're drawing every day, you're going to improve. You're going to get better. It can be really discouraging. It's really discouraging for professional artists, even. Like, artists are some of the hardest people on themselves. Like, for whatever reason, like, it's some personality thing. But we're very, very hard on ourselves. We don't give ourselves a lot of credit. But if you can just, you know, grit your teeth a little bit and power through it and keep drawing and keep studying and keep, you know, looking at life and drawing from life, you know, study. If you have access to, like, life drawing classes, if you're doing, like, figurative art, if you're doing, like, people and that kind of thing. If you have access to figure drawing classes, that was one of the most beneficial things that I got from art school, was the abundance of life drawing classes, because it really, really changes the way that you look at the body and the way that you know how the body works. But I mean, like, people are like, oh, like, do I need to go to art school to be an artist? And really, like, no, you don't. If you can, you should, because you're gonna, you know, if you can swing it, like, and the school that you are interested in is decent and seems to, you know, be good, I mean, you're going to get a lot of connections that you would never get otherwise. You're going to get a lot of experience that you wouldn't necessarily be able to on your own. But it's not necessary to be an artist. You just have to, you know, keep, you just have to have a passion for it and really commit yourself to being like, listen, I'm not very good at drawing this, but I'm going to keep drawing it until I'm happy with it, you know? And I still struggle with that. Like, the number of times that I've been like, I don't want to draw this car, so I'm just going to hide it. Like, you know, like, and that's not the way to, like, cars and, like, horses and, like, buildings, like, I hate drawing them, but you're never going to get better if you don't keep doing it. So, I mean, that's the best advice that I can give anybody who's trying to pursue art, or even anybody who's trying to draw more, is just keep drawing. Don't stop drawing. It's a muscle. You have to work it out, or else it's going to atrophy.
I'm going to interject here and just mention, hey, Kendra, aren't you the one who does Art Student Owl?
Ha ha ha, yeah.
What?
Does anybody still, like,
I know the blog. Is that yours?
Yeah, that was actually, you know, I said that my first foray into fandom was Glee, but it was actually, I accidentally created a meme.
And it's still, no big deal.
I know. I haven't updated the blog in like a year. I've started to get messages being like, are you dead? And I'm like, yeah, leave me alone.
No, I love that blog so much. And also, what is it? Not Art Student Owl, but like the Art Student High School Owl or Baby Owl.
Which one is that? I didn't do that one. That was actually a fan, like somebody else made that, which was hilarious.
I loved the one that you posted that was like, find all my high school drawings. Why does everyone look like they're under arrest? And then the Baby Art Student Owl was like, hands are really hard. I'll just hide them behind their back or something like that. And I was like, oh my gosh. Like that is my childhood.
One hand behind the back for some reason, because that's normal and like a casual thing to do.
I gave up on art myself. I did it till like 10th grade and gave up. So, yeah.
You know, and it's okay. Like sometimes art just isn't like if you don't feel passionately about it, don't make yourself do it. But like it is an avenue, you know, for people. Sometimes people are like, oh, I wish I were that talented. And honestly, like it's all just drawing a lot. And
Nothing's stopping you. You know, it sucks sometimes because it's like, I definitely will get into that mode where I'll look at art that I like, artists that I really admire, and I'll be like, oh god, like I'm never gonna be able to draw like that, like I'm so jealous, like, and you can let it get you down, or you can just use it as inspiration and be like, you know what, I'm gonna try, like I really like how they did this, how did they do that, and you study the way that they draw or the way that they color or the way that, you know, they did this, that, and their other thing, and use that as a because I mean it's like that quote, the, you know, good artists whatever create that, better artists steal, whatever the hell, but it's not, you know, don't trace necessarily, but that's one of the best things you can do as an artist is study what other people are doing and use that to inspire and to keep going, you know.
And definitely so many artists do that. I do that. I look at artists whose work I love and I'm like, what is it about this piece that really resonates with me? And I try to figure that out and like maybe like try to incorporate aspects of that into my work. But you don't want to like, now I'm kind of getting onto a tangent, but some people look at someone's art and they copy the style and that's all they do. And that just, not only is it a disservice to the artist that's being copied, like that's not fair to them because that's something that they, you know, came upon through their own personal investigations of their art.
They developed on their own.
Exactly. So you're basically just taking that from them, but it's also a disservice to the person copying's art. Like you're doing yourself a disservice by not exploring your own path, you know, and just it means it's just not yours. So I unfortunately know a few people in the Teen Wolf fandom, you know, who've had their art, you know, copied like that. And it's not a trace. It's just the way they color, the way they do hair, the way they style it. And their work gets mistaken by other person as another person's work. Like the other person's work gets mistaken for their work. And it's very unfortunate because I feel like that just causes the person who's copying to stagnate. They just don't get the opportunity to be themselves because they're too busy trying to be the artist they like, you know, and that's just, it's not fair to either of them. But regarding Kendra, you mentioned about being, you know, people who are like, I can't draw well, I'm a bad artist kind of feeling. I had somebody ask me once, well, you know, do you ever get to a point where you feel good about your art? And I was like, honestly, no. You're never going to be sitting there. If you're sitting there going, my art's awesome, you've stopped learning. You're not learning anymore. You're not progressing anymore. And most artists never hit the point where they're like, yeah, I'm so good at this. I'm such a great artist. We spend most of our lives trying to achieve something that we don't even, you know, the goal in our heads just constantly gets moved forward like 500 feet. Even if we do reach that point we wanted, we're still not going to be satisfied. It's like, very unfortunate.
That sounds so, like, I feel like people who aren't artists are listening to this being like, what the hell is wrong with these people? That sounds so depressing, but it's true. It's true.
And just like, you never reach, there are days where I sit down and I look at my art and I just want to cry, like, because I hate it so much. And like, or it's not what I want. Like, it's not where I want to be. It's not as good as, you know, other people whose art I really love, you know, and then I get depressed about it.
Yeah.
And that's okay. It's okay to have bad feelings about your art and yourself. It just happens. But the important part is picking yourself back up and going, no, I am not done yet. I am not through with this yet. I'm going to keep going, you know, because I want to be that good. I want to be better. How do I make myself better? And so for people who want to improve, it's so important for you to set challenges for yourself. I mean, you can't just like flop around, you know, doing whatever or like stay in your comfort zone. You have to like push yourself. What's going to get you out of your comfort zone? Do it. And fail, but then do it again and maybe not fail as hard and then do it again. So like, the thing is that failure shouldn't stop you from doing something. I say this as someone who hates drawing mechanical things and architecture. God. I hate it so much and I avoid it. And I'm always like, oh, I'm so bad at it. And Mr. Dot always gets mad at me. He's like, just do it. Because he's looked at my old art and he's like, you used to draw Mecca. What's going on here? You had no problems with it before, and now you've just worked yourself into this state that you don't think you can do it. And he's right. Like, it's definitely something I need to be better about. But don't tell yourself you can't do things. I guess for people wanting to become better artists, don't think you can't do something. Don't psych yourself out. Just go and try to do it. Like, do the best you can, and go and use reference. If you're not sure what something looks like, go find pictures of what the thing you're trying to draw and use that as reference. And you don't trace it, but, or heck, if that's what you need to help you learn what a thing looks like on paper, then trace it. I mean, don't use it in your portfolio. Like, I traced this thing wonderfully, but like getting your hand used to it, I don't see any problem with that. Like, if it's something that's getting you used to the way a thing looks, using photos as reference and like tracing over things to get a feel for it, I think those are completely legitimate. It's not copying to look at a photo to try to understand how a hand looks at a certain angle. So yeah. I think that's really important. The other thing that really helped me a lot in my baby drawing stages was learning the human body inside and out. So understanding the bone structure, where all the joints are and how the joints move, and then understanding where the muscles are. Because, you know, even though the skin is overlapping the muscles leave that curvature on the body and those shadows. And so understanding how that lays on the body, how the skin, you know, lays over the muscle is really important. And knowing the joints and that kind of thing also is really important. So I think just applying yourself to, you know, that and drawing skeletons and understanding that can really help with understanding the way the human body works. So sometimes, you know, you'll see young artists and they won't, like, the hips won't look right because you can't picture the joints of the legs fitting into the way the hips are. So kind of like, once you understand that, you'll be able to put it on paper a lot easier. At least that's my thoughts on it. So life drawing, like Kendra was saying, very important. So,
yeah. And speaking of artists that you guys admire and that you look to learn from, do you have anybody just off the top of your head that you could send either people who want to become artists or people who just enjoy this sort of thing, other fan artists that you want to just name drop really quick?
other fan artists in general? Well, Ranka, obviously.
She's so great.
Yeah,
her line work is amazing. Oh,
she is so inspired, and her style is so unique and so unlike anything I've ever seen. And she's also like the nicest human being alive. She's so so wonderful. I think she's the teenage horror still on Tumblr.
She is.
And who else? Oh, Vulcanes does some. She did like a lot of the punk AU Teen Wolf stuff.
I love her work.
She drew the Zayn Malik's current Twitter icon, which he saw and put as his icon. So she's kind of super famous and special. she's also a total darling. But her art is fantastic. God, who else? Everybody, man. Like Dawn, obviously. Krugen. Krugen's amazing.
She is. Oh my gosh.
Oh God, who else? Spaggle. She's fantastic.
Adorable.
I finally got to meet her at HowlerCon, and she's just hilarious and wonderful. Karen, Kraken Goo.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Marie, who she doesn't do a whole lot of fan art anymore, but she's also a wonderful person.
She is so wonderful and so talented too.
Oh God, she does these beautiful, like realistic digital paintings. She's like very into Captain America and stuff now too. Everybody, man. I'm so in love with everyone.
Now, if we're talking outside the Teen Wolf fandom, because you mentioned, like, all people that I love and would highly recommend.
Mm-hmm.
If we're talking outside the Teen Wolf fandom, there's a girl named Euclase who does very realistic, like, they look like photos almost, but they're too pretty to be photos. Like, she kind of takes the concept of photorealism and takes it to the next level because they're very, mm-hmm. like, ethereal looking, her portraits. And she actually did a really gorgeous portrait of Scott that was amazing. Mm. And she deleted it from her blog. I have it on my computer. She is one of those people who is like all artists. She gets frustrated with her work, or there's something about it she doesn't like, and she'll delete it. So if you see something of hers that you like, you know, save it on your computer or reblog it, because she might delete it, because that, you know, and it's her work. It's up to her what she wants to do. One of the things I love about her work that she mentioned once that I've that really stuck with me was that when she paints the art she does, everything is in terms of light. Like she thinks about how the light is affecting something. I found that really, really inspiring. So that's something I really like about her work, is that she's painting light more than anything else, mm-hmm. than the actual figure. So that's like, fascinating.
That's like the classicest way to paint, isn't it? It's very Da Vinci.
Yeah. And the thing is, when you see her work, it makes sense, because she definitely has. She's taken, because there's photorealism, and I'm not always the biggest fan of photorealism. I think it's amazing and very technical, but I sometimes just need more. I need more, which it doesn't mean that there's something lesser about photorealism. It is a truly incredible art. But just on a personal level, like there's something about it. I need a little bit more engagement with the artist, I guess, more seeing their style to it. And she definitely has a very distinct style in all of her art. So she's interesting. And then actually a friend of mine, her name is Letty. She's actually was mostly in the Supernatural fandom, and she does Disney too, but she's Letty Bobetti on Tumblr. And she's almost entirely self-taught, but she's one of those people who pushes herself to try new things, and she picks new things up very quickly. It's very cool to watch. But one of the things I love about her work is her ability to capture lighting and different times of day. And she is able to express like the different shades of skin with the lighting, and so you'll see her start a picture and she'll do the people's skin in like teal, and you're like, where are you going with this? And when she finishes, it just looks perfect. You're just like, wow, how? So those are two people that I like look to and get a lot of inspiration from.
I also forgot to mention Jade, who is Ranka's partner in crime. Yes. A little bit. I love Jade's work. Her stuff is
Jade's work is amazing. Her name is Hydre on
on Tumblr. She is beautiful, like super graphic, very clean. She did those ones of Malia and Styles, right? Like
she did a little comic of them that was
they're so cute, they're so expressive, and she does such amazing work.
Just out of curiosity, I'm just looking at her art. Just I'm just like lurking people as you talk. Mm-hmm. Do you know if she did the cover for the Big Bang Press book?
She did.
Yeah, I recognize this. Yeah, she did the Hero at the End of the World cover. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
I recognize the style. Yeah, cool.
It's beautiful. Like, really clean. Like, it looks like her drawings always look like they just emerged fully formed. Like, there's no sketchiness about them. They look like they should be, like, animated into cartoons. Like, they're so shiny and clean and beautiful.
Yeah, exactly. I love her work so much. She's got such a great sense of composition, too, which is so hard, but she just nails it every time. It's really cool.
Yeah.
I think just to finish up, I actually wanted to ask if there was a favorite piece of fan art, I guess, or a piece either that sort of you always remember sort of moving you for a particular reason from long back, and also your favorite piece by each other.
Ooh.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, the first part, let me think. I don't know. Now I'm drawing a blank, but I'm always amazed at what people do. And it's like, it's one of those things where I'll see people doing art and it's just like, it inspires me. Okay. This is not Teen Wolf related. And I don't actually remember the artist of it, but someone in the One Direction fandom did a wonderful piece of Niall, and he's wearing a hat. He's wearing, like, it's supposed to be like Harry's hat, like these big stupid farmer's hats that Harry Styles wears. And it's this it's like this really beautiful, almost like crayon sort of style. And there's all these beautiful poppy flowers in the back. And I cannot for the light. Hold on. I'm going to just investigate this really, really quick. But it was such a beautiful, beautiful piece. And it was one of those things where, I love fan art. I love when other people draw fan art. I just think it's like the most inspiring thing in the entire world. And it's like why I keep drawing it, frankly, because there's nothing more. Because I'm an artist and I'm a nerd and all I want to do is see other people do work. And I want more of it all the time. Always. I am rambling a little bit because I'm Googling currently. Googling. Oh, there's, now that I'm in my art tag on my One Direction blog, Invisible Innocence is she did this amazing, like Glen Keane inspired drawing. Dawn, I think you reblogged it maybe too.
Oh, really?
It's a beautiful, beautiful, it's like really Glen Keane inspired, and her, line work is just so beautiful and amazing, and I can't stand it. I'm still looking for this thing. I'm still going through my blog. I'm just gonna sing a song in the meantime. Oh my god, I didn't reblog it. Fuck. Never mind.
I like this journey into your reblogs.
Into my psyche, more like. Well, apparently I didn't reblog it. I think. I don't know. I don't remember. If someone out there knows what I'm talking about, then God bless you. But I mean, I love all fan art. I love when people do fan art, and I encourage people to draw more of it. As for my favorite piece by Daunt, I actually know that right off the bat. And it's the picture. It's the picture of, she gave me one at HowlerCon, a little mini print of it. It's a picture of Derek Hale in a crop top in these super bright 80s colors, and he's like lounging and all of his abs are out, and it's my absolutely my favorite piece that Dawn has ever done. It makes me so happy, because like more boys in crop tops for one thing, but like it's so good and I love it so much.
Oh my god, that's hilarious. Thank you. I'm glad you like it.
I love it. It's my favorite.
Okay, thinking about fandom stuff that has moved me a lot. This is so hard because I am one of those people who can never pick a favorite thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to have trouble with
just
with
something
picking a favorite of Kendra's
that comes
too.
To mind.
Something that comes to mind that really like gave me a lot of feelings. Melissa did this headshot of Scott that was just really beautiful. It was grayscale, but she...
I have a print of that.
I'm
literally looking at it right now.
Yeah, no, same. I think.
It's the profile shot, and yeah, I don't know what it is.
Well, grayscale, full profile, like a lot of, like stencil-like shadows on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
That one, and this was really early when I, right before I got into, like, right when I was getting into Teen Wolf, she did some Teen Wolf fan art, and so that one, and then her piece with Lydia and Peter, where it's an animated GIF, and it flickers into... Mm. Peter being burned. It was very cool. Like, it was very, I don't know. I found those pieces just as Teen Wolf pieces. I found them really, really inspiring and exciting to see in the Teen Wolf fandom. And there's so many amazing artists in the Teen Wolf fandom. It's so hard to like talk about it. Like Sumi, seeing her work is really cool. Her work is really, really great too. So, but as far as inspiration wise, like those two pieces by Krugen are just really fantastic. So
Krugen's amazing. She's so, the way she draws is like beautiful and like seriously, fascinating to me.
Yeah, yeah. And it's really fun to watch her draw, like to watch her do her art. It's really, really neat. But she's the one who got me into Teen Wolf. So if anyone needs to blame someone for me being in the Teen Wolf fandom, it is Krugen. So there you go. As for pieces that I like of Kendra's, this is so difficult because Kendra has so much work.
No.
99% of every little comic that she's done, and I only say 99% because I feel like if I say 100, it'll sound disingenuous, but it's probably 100%. But I love all those. All of them are just hilarious. I'm trying to remember one in specific that was really, really made me laugh so hard. Actually, you know, the commission I got you to do for my friend Kara is still one of the things that it really makes me laugh hard.
When Styles is sick?
Yes. And Derek is like, what the hell is a bouillon? Like, really beautiful.
Derek trying to read a recipe to make chicken soup for Styles. And he goes, what the fuck is a bouillon? And he brings back like a bunch of chicken nuggets. And he's like, I can put them in some hot water if you want.
It was wonderful. She loved that so much. That just
I'm sad.
That was wonderful. So I love that one. But as far as like art pieces rather over comics, I really loved the one you did of Isaac with the flowers, because I loved your detail work on that one. I thought that was really beautiful. And
the
then
only successful drawing of Isaac I've ever done.
It's really beautiful. I love that one a lot.
Yeah.
Just all the detail work and your color choices and the composition is just really, really nice. But I mean, there's so many of your pieces that I really love, but that one definitely stays in my mind a lot. So I like that one. Also, your cute picture of that girl band was really adorable.
Little Mix. I love them. They're so cute.
Oh, and then things that make me cry forever, your the Winter Skittles picture. Definitely.
Oh god, yeah. My legacy.
Yeah. Yep. We'll always cry over that. But yeah.
Cool. I think that is all of our questions. Karen, unless you had anything you wanted to close with.
No, I think that was pretty good.
Cool. Do either of you girls have anything you wanted to kind of say or announce to the world, or you know, just anything to say to each other or us or anything before we head off?
I love Dawn.
I love you, Kendra.
Yay! That's
my all I have to say is I love Dawn.
I love Kendra. I'm looking forward to our next convention together.
God, yes.
Thank you so much for taking the time to come on with us. It's really exciting, and there's lots of really, really in-depth stuff here that I hope people are interested in. I was interested.
thank you for having us. This is really awesome.
No, it's good. It's good. And you guys sounded like you had fun talking to each other. It was exciting to listen. Of course.
Just really quickly, I wanted to mention that Friday, this coming Friday, which is January 23rd, is the last day to enter the Days of the Wolf giveaway that we're doing with Creation Entertainment, and you can win if you enter two gold tickets to the Burbank Convention in California for Days of the Wolf, which is a really good deal. You basically get, you know, VIP access to everything, and it's really exciting. And we're really happy that they decided to work with us on this. So go to hypeable.com. We can link to the specific post in the show notes and enter and see what happens. You never know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty cool that they reached out to us to do that. That was nice. So yeah, we have that going on at the moment.
Hey, Kendra, I was actually thinking about trying to go to one of the Days of the Wolf cons and being a vendor.
Ooh. So
if you want to double up, share a table
maybe
with me?
Maybe. Yes, always. Yeah. I don't know how to not share a table with you.
I know. It wouldn't feel like a real convention if I didn't share a table with you.
I know.
Cute.
Aw, we're so married. Cute. It's disgusting.
I'm okay with that.
I love it.
Okay, well, on that note, I shall let these two get a room or something, and Karen and I shall go. But yeah, thank you to them for coming on, and you can go in and look at their art and support them and support, you know, all of the fan artists in the Teen Wolf community. And hopefully they will continue producing cool stuff for us to love, and that will be great. So, yeah, we're excited to see you again whenever we see you. But until then, thank you so much, and bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Sorry, I'm drinking water. So I'm also drunk. I'm not trying to ruin this podcast so much.